Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Leading Edge Love Radio. This is your host, Sumati Sparks, the Open Relationship Coach. Have you ever wondered how well suited you are for ethical non-monogamy? Well, you can find out by taking my quiz. And you can find the quiz right on the homepage of my website, sumatisparks.com. That's spelled S as in Sam, U, M as in Mary, A, T as in Tom, I, Sparks, as in sparks are flying. And when you enter your email, you'll be added to my mailing list as well, and you'll be the first to learn about both my online events as well as my live events in the San Francisco Bay Area. So tonight, I'm really looking forward to my guest, whose name is Hala Fawzi. Hala grew up in Alexandria, Egypt, to the rhythms and melodies of the Middle East. And she was a key figure in Middle Eastern arts and culture in the San Francisco Bay Area for many, many years, including performing and teaching dance for over 20 years. But for the past year and a half, she's been traveling around the world being her free, loving self. And today she joins us from Brazil. Welcome to the show, Hala.
Thank you, Samoji. It's my pleasure.
So glad to have you. Yeah, glad to have you here from Brazil. I can't wait to hear about how you ended up there. But let's start by talking. Just your personal journey. And I know you like to use the term free love and polyamory and all kinds of different labels. So maybe you can start by telling us your personal story of how you came to be practicing open relationships and what that looks like for you today, and what terms you use to describe yourself.
Sure. My journey into open love or free love has not been easy, as you can imagine. But it was more of a journey of self-discovery, because I grew up in Egypt where people's favorite pastime is to complain, and their favorite subject to complain about is their spouse. And so I was always puzzled by how much people yearn for and seek marriage, and then a short while after they get married, they start complaining and it never ends. So my natural instinct is that I don't want anything to do with that kind of weird practice. So I used to say, oh, I don't believe in love, because the mainstream culture and society in like songs and movies and stories and pop culture, this is what they call love. And that thing that they call love led to an inevitable prison called marriage. And I just participate in that. So as an adult, I practiced serial monogamy, like most people in the U.S. But during that time, the longest relationship lasted only like 1 year. And between relationships, I kind of basically was polyamorous without even knowing there was a name to it. But
right.
Basically, I didn't come across the term until I lived in San Francisco. But that's, you know, a different story. So basically, I would have multiple what we call now friends with benefits. We used to call them SO, or significant others. And because I don't like lying, I just made sure that everybody was on the same page. Like, there is no need to like hide, because, you know, I was free to be myself with whoever I choose to be. And then I came across the term, and it's like, oh, so this, you know, this thing is actually has a name and exists. So I was very relieved to know that. But I still was looking for the relationship to live happily ever after, because, again, societal conditioning told me that what I was doing is not sustainable. So it's just something that kind of, you know, to pass time, but I still have to find the one kind of thing. And so I still struggled with calling myself polyamorous, and of course, my main fear was to be judged, because people, you know, I had this impression that if I say to people that I'm polyamorous or I want an open relationship or whatever, they would think, oh, she's just into sex, she's an easy lay, all that stuff. And so Mm-hmm. I still try to conform, like suppress that part of my nature and try to conform. And unfortunately, by doing that, I kept attracting the wrong people in life because I was not authentic to my nature. And then at some point, when I came across the concept of unconditional love, I thought, okay, this makes sense to me. This kind of love, which I give freely to others, and people give me freely without ownership, without possessiveness, without ego, without fear, that made sense to me. And then I became a believer instantly. It's like, okay, this is the kind of love that I want to participate in. I don't want to, have any claim or have any ownership over my partner's body or my or time, and I don't want them to have any claim over my time or my body. When I share my time and my body, it's because I want to, not because I have to or because, you know, they hold a piece of paper or whatever. It just didn't make sense to me. So that's kind of, you know, and then after a while of trying to conform and trying to suppress my nature, I just said, you know, it's just not working, because I would meet somebody and then would get to know them. And then after a while, I would say, okay, but, you know, really who I am is this and this and this. And then they would freak out. It's like, oh, you lied to me, blah, blah, blah. And then they would run away scared. So I thought, you know what, this is not working. So I started declaring who I am from day one. It's like, this is what I want and this is who I am. And by some, like, weird magic, I started attracting the right people in my life, and it was so easy and so simple that I just like was beating myself up. Why did I try so hard to change myself when just by honoring my nature, I can easily find and connect with like-minded people. So that's when I decided to just, okay, I'm just going to be who I am and just honor my nature, be true to my heart, and let everything else fall where they may.
Yeah, I really appreciate that you said that, because that's been happening for me more recently too, where I staked my claim as a solo poly person, and I've been having the best relationships ever with the most amazing people. and then I was talking to a friend the other day who was complaining about he dates women only, and he's dating that all the women try to turn him into monogamous when he's not. And he said his ad that he has on whatever app he's using, he puts down at the bottom, and I'm non-monogamous. And I was like, well, why don't you put that at the top of your ad instead of the bottom? No wonder you're
attracting people. Yes, thank you.
They're thinking it's just an afterthought. Oh, I'm non-monogamous. But if you put it in the beginning, like, I'm non-monogamous, that's going to weed out anybody who's not okay with that. And he was like, oh, I can't do that. You know, yeah. So it's really important to, but it takes some maturity and time, don't you think, to kind of have the confidence and the trust in the universe that there's going to be enough people who are like us?
For sure, yeah. I mean, and it's amazing how many people actually are struggling with the same issue. Like, once, as soon as you declare it, it's like they all come out of you know, everywhere. It's like, oh, so, and it's really very heartwarming that even people who are not okay with the concept, they have heard of it, or at least they are okay with it. Like, they're not the evil monsters that I used to have in my head who are going to judge me. They're actually, it's like, oh, okay, so, you know, you like tea and coffee. You know, it's not a super traumatic judgment like I used to fear.
So I heard you use the term free love, and I think most people think about the 60s in America when they hear that term. But I interviewed somebody else on my radio show last year named Kelly Bryson, who used that term from the intentional communities in Europe, like Zeg and Tamara. They use that term too. So where did you get the term?
Actually, from Kelly Bryson.
Okay. I wondered if it was from that same tribe. Yeah. Okay, cool. So tell us what that means to you, and why is that term a more effective term than polyamory?
I actually use them interchangeably depending on the specifics. Mm-hmm. But I used to use, I mean, I still use unconditional love. And mm-hmm. and I realized by using that, it's a big trigger for many people because mm-hmm. There's a lot of suffering around abuse. So when people hear mm-hmm. unconditional, they freak out. Like, no, it has to be conditional. It has to be compassion. I mean, and so I try to use free love because in essence, what I mean by that is free from fear. Like when I love somebody, I'm not afraid of losing them. I'm not afraid of them cheating on me. I'm actually, in my opinion, I'm loving them unconditionally. Like when I love them, I'm giving them my love because I enjoy giving them. I enjoy loving. It's healthy. It feels good. It's healing. It makes me happy. So I'm not doing it to get anything in return. I'm doing it because it feels good. And for me, that's really the only way. That's really true love, because anything else is an exchange of benefits. It's a trade. Like I'm gonna give you my love to get your time, or to get children, or to get, I mean, all that stuff. It's not, in my opinion, it's not love. It's a trade. It's an exchange of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing mm-hmm. wrong with that. I mean, that's the natural flow of energy. But if, when we call it love, then we actually try. We like shrink this infinite beauty into a very kind of confined role. But love is
like almost a commodity,
huh? Exactly. Yeah. Like we use. I mean, in mainstream culture, what they call love, it's actually it's using love and sex as a commodity to be traded for, you know, money or time or security or whatever. I mean, it's an exchange of energy. But when we think of love, it's actually much bigger than that. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, this huge, beautiful energy that we all came from and we all are in our essence. And it's much bigger than a commodity to be exchanged. Because mm-hmm. when you love somebody, you love them because it feels good to love, not because I want something from them. If you only mm-hmm. love them because you want something from them, then it's not love, in my opinion.
Right. So I find that when I'm feeling really resourced, like I have enough connections in my life, I have friends, I have intimate connections, you know, all the kinds of community support that I want, and I'm feeling like I'm well rested and my body is healthy, that's when I can really give love without needing anything in return. But so often, if I'm feeling rejected or isolated and lonely, then I'm kind of wanting someone to validate me. And also when I was younger and new in my personal growth path and I just didn't have very good self-esteem, you know, I wanted people to validate me. If I had this certain kind of partner, that meant something. So what do you recommend for people to be able to give love from a giving place rather than getting validation or getting their cup filled or something? How can we be more in that space where we can give from a place of overflowing?
Absolutely. Thank you for mentioning that. That's key, actually, of how to give love unconditionally. And basically, in other words, how to fill up your energy reservoir, so to speak.
Right.
And that's a very important question. Let me step back a little and explain why there is a lack of that. Because in mainstream culture, basically, the main point I want to get to is that unconditional love starts in the mirror. Because if you, we have this saying in Arabic, فَقَدْ الشَّيْءِ لَا يَعْطِيهِ, if you cannot love what you lack. So if you cannot love yourself unconditionally, then you're not able, you cannot give it to other people.
Mm-hmm.
So the first step and the most important practice is to practice loving oneself unconditionally. And unfortunately, again, we all grew up in cultures that teach us that loving yourself is selfish, it's arrogance, it's narcissism, all these bad things that we're not supposed to do. And that leads to a love-hungry culture. So we all are seeking love outside of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so it's not a healthy attachment. It's a needy kind of attachment. And that's why we have a love-hungry culture, because we're not able to give love unconditionally to ourselves. So if we retrain our brains and kind of recondition ourselves to be okay, and not even be okay, but to reprogram our mind that it's actually healthy to love ourselves unconditionally, then we can have a completely different life, and we can have a completely different culture, and we can have a completely different, you know, human history. One of the practices that I teach and recommend, it's actually the first and most important one, is to love oneself unconditionally, and that actually is a practice, because every single interaction, every single thought, every single emotion that we have is an opportunity to practice self-love and self-care. Because the first step towards loving yourself is to know yourself. So understand, like you study yourself like you study your most beloved person, to get to know yourself beyond the stories, like who you are, what your triggers are, where they come from. And of course, it takes a lot of forgiveness and a lot of acceptance. It's actually kind of interesting how most of the time we are our harshest judges, like we are harder on ourselves, like we judge ourselves much more harshly than other people's judges.
English term is, we are our own worst critic.
Very true. And that's a very unhealthy habit. Mm-hmm. So the most important step towards healthy relationships, whether they're monogamous, polyamorous, or even relationship with your parents or your neighbors or your coworkers, any relationship whatsoever, is to know yourself, love yourself unconditionally, and own your power. And I'm happy to explain mm-hmm. that as well, because that's also very crucial.
Yeah, please do. Owning your own power. Tell us.
So basically, owning your power is to be able to act from that space of love and abundance. Or as you just said, having your reservoir of love full. So mm-hmm. if we are triggered, and we react from our triggers, then we're not in our power. We are basically in reaction mode. We are working against something. So you can still do the same action if it means a lot to you, but if you shift from being in reaction mode or being in fear and scarcity to your power, like being in control, being a choice of which course to take, then that's being in your power.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to be in your power, we have to understand, basically the first step is to find a way to heal your inner child. And luckily enough, in this day and age, there's like 1,001 ways to heal the inner child. Mm-hmm. Basically understand where your triggers come from, and forgive yourself and your ancestors for thousands and thousands of years of fear and scarcity and wars. I mean, we are a result of all the traumas that have happened in the past. So in order to be in our power, we have to understand that it might not be our fault, it might not be our parents' fault, it might not be our, you know, ancestors' fault, but this is what we inherited. So we have to, like, get to the point where we can find love and forgiveness for all these traumas that have accumulated over the thousands and thousands of years.
Right.
And then
once
we find our triggers, thank you. Once we find, or not find, but I mean, they're always there. It's not very hard to find. But knowing our triggers, we also have to be patient with healing them, because whenever we are in fear, fear has a lesson for us, like there's a lesson for us to learn. Like fear is our biggest teacher. When you think about how we grow and how we learn, you know, just like the very simple example is like we all learned not to touch a hot surface because we got burned. And that's true for the emotional traumas as well. You know, we all grow from pain. So when we have a painful experience or a negative emotional reaction, instead of acting on it and relating to it as the truth, we need to take a breath and stop for a second and examine what is going on here. Where is this emotional reaction coming from? What can I learn from it about myself? So owning your power is, instead of blaming others for your life or your reactions or your whatever is happening to you, basically being in victim mode, owning your power meaning I'm going to shift and see what can I learn from this negative emotion, from this fear, and be a choice as to what how to react to the stimulus.
Mm-hmm, right.
I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's
basically.
No, absolutely. I think that that's one of the key things for people that practice non-monogamy is to be able to not blame the other person for their feelings. And until we can do that, until we can stop blaming someone else for the way we feel, I don't think you can be successful in non-monogamy. So that's a really key skill. And we're never perfect at it, but as long as we are trying and we catch ourselves when we slip, I think that's one of the foundational skills that we need, don't you?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's every single interaction with anybody in our lives, whether it's actually even in monogamy, instead of blaming the other person for our problems and our life and whatever, we can still own our power in any kind of relationship, even with our bosses at work. I mean, you know, how many times have you heard, you know, my boss made me do this, or
right.
My boss is an idiot. So
or even just like it's so common for people to use the phrase, you know, they made me feel whatever, fill in the blank, you know, just even that phrase, you made me feel hurt. You made me feel sad. Like, it's such a common place for people to go to assume that someone else's behavior made them feel a certain way. But if we can slow that down, right, slow it down, isn't there usually a thought first and then the feeling?
Exactly, yes. And yes, so basically every time I find myself in judgment, like negative judgment about somebody or something or even myself, I stop and ask myself, I have this this rule, like a rule of thumb, if you may. If you can kind of visualize, judgment is like pointing the finger.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have a finger pointing at something or somebody and saying, oh, they're wrong or bad or evil or whatever negative judgment there is, there are three other fingers pointing at you. And the three other fingers, I call them the PET. Basically, it's a reminder to examine myself on three different levels. P is the physical level, like my body. How am I feeling? Because usually, when our bodies are like tired or hungry or like lacking something, we are easily triggered because physically we are lacking something very basic, and that's the most mm-hmm. basic the most basic level. So that's the thing,
right.
The piece. So on the physical level, I ask myself, okay, I'm judging here, so let me check, okay, how am I feeling? Am I hungry? Am I thirsty? Am I cold? Am I hot? Do I need touch? Do I need physical movement? Whatever it is, do I need rest? And you'll be amazed how many negative emotions just disappear after a good nap or a good orgasm. It's
mm-hmm.
just like, it's like, poof, like magic. So the first thing to check is like, okay, how am I feeling on a physical level? The second, which is the ring finger, is the emotion level. What emotional needs are not being met? So the emotional needs can be like, do I need company? Do I need my space? Do I need to be validated? Do I need safety? So on the emotional level, how am I feeling? So again, I'm examining my own emotions, and especially in conjunction with the trigger or the person or the thing that I'm judging. How am I feeling towards that thing? And the third one, which is the most potent one, is the thoughts. So E is emotions and T is thoughts. What thought patterns do I have about this situation? And the most important thing, is it actually happening in the here and now, in the present moment, or is it something from the past trauma, from a past experience? Is it my own thought, or is it an inherited thought? Is it something that I actually just got from society, or is it something I actually believe in? So thoughts mm-hmm. are the biggest kind of cobweb where judgments exist. So that's a very important one to examine. And usually, when you examine these three things, you can very easily find the space where you flip from love and abundance to fear and scarcity. It's like, oh yeah, it's like, you know, I felt this way because, you know, I have this thought that, you know, let's say for example, I have this belief that, you know, my spouse has to, I don't know, be my, I don't know, provider or provide for or be my you know, only source of security. And then I examined that thought, okay, is this true? Is this realistic? Can I put all my emotional and physical needs into one person? Is that realistic? I mean, realistically, that's actually setting them up for failure and setting myself up for disappointment because no one person can fulfill another person's all their physical and emotional needs. It's just insanity.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to examine all these inherited thoughts and inherited belief systems. Do they make any sense? It might make sense for a short time, but do they make sense on a long term? So these are the kind of thoughts and belief systems that we need to examine when we are in judgment. And hopefully at some point you'll come to the, you know, to some kind of either agreement or some kind of discussion or honest communication with whoever is in your life and come to some kind of a win-win situation where you both get your needs and your desires fulfilled in a healthy way without hurting the others, because what hurts other people is acting out of judgment and acting out of triggers and not communicating honestly what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just like a little quick example of how it can help by examining your own thoughts.
I love that. So the three fingers are PET, physical, emotional, and thoughts. It's really helpful. Thank you for that.
Yeah,
so if you're just joining us, you're listening to Leading Edge Love Radio, and this is your host, Sumati Sparks, the Open Relationship Coach, and we're speaking with Hala Fauzi, an Egyptian dancer and dance teacher who's been traveling around the world for the last year and a half, and I want to hear a little bit about that too, but if you do want to call in and ask Hala any questions, feel free to call in. The guest call-in number is 657-383-1132. 657-383-1132, and feel free to call in anytime between now and the next 15 or 20 minutes. You won't interrupt us. You'll be put on hold, and we'll just answer the call when we're ready. So tell us how you came to be traveling around the world, and where have you gone, and all that kind of good stuff.
Oh, for sure. Well, it's always been a dream of mine to travel around the world. Or to travel. I mean, I've always been a traveler. I just love that kind of exploration. And so in 2016, I had a very traumatic year I was living in California, living my dream life, dancing, teaching dance, hosting dance events, and I had three cats. And 2016, by some bizarre luck, all three cats, even though they were ages 4, 9, and 11, they all died in the same year. And my mother also died. I had a car accident, so my car died as well. And so I thought,
wow,
this is so traumatic, and it was very depressing. And I realized that what was making me depressed was not the fact that all these things died, because everything is going to die, but I was so attached to how things should and should not be. I had this kind of, especially to my cats, I had very, very strong emotional attachments, and so everything around me in California reminded me of the fact that they're not there anymore. And so I decided to basically go traveling at that point, because I wanted to practice non-attachment and living in the moment. And travel is the best way to do that, because when I'm traveling, I've traveled, you know, a lot, and when I'm traveling, I'm forced to worry about, okay, every single day, what am I going to do today? What am I going to sleep? What am I going to eat? So it forces me to live in the moment. So I decided this is what I want to do. And during this journey, I'm researching intentional communities, because I want to live in community.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been an exploration, as much of an external exploration as much as it is for an internal exploration. And so it's been a wonderful journey. I've been studying Tantra. I've been living as much as I can in community and researching different communities. So it's been a wonderful experience that's really helping me kind of understand myself and understand people much more. And it's kind of interesting because, you know, after a year and a half now, I've like, you know, slept on beaches, slept on couches, slept in hammocks, slept on benches. Slept in 5-star hotels, slept in resorts, slept in a spa, met people from all over the world, from different religions, from different backgrounds, different ethnicities, all sorts of people all over the political spectrum, from conservative to liberal and everything in between. And I'm realizing more and more the truth to the statement that there's nothing to fear but fear itself. And it's very, very true. Like, you know, our biggest enemy is not, you know, other people or even animals or insects. Our biggest enemy is fear, because unfortunately, because we come from thousands and thousands of years of fear and scarcity, we are so conditioned to acting and reacting and living in fear that even when there's nothing to fear, We make things up and fear them. It's like it's so insane. Like we fear nature. We fear the other. Like, you know, people don't share our stories, or people don't share our geographical location. We just make them into monsters, and we fear them, when in reality they're just like us. And it makes me very sad. So I'm
beautiful. So are you staying in a community in Brazil?
In Brazil, right now I'm not. I'm staying in a hostel, but I did live the last 2 weeks with a wonderful kind of spontaneous family. Like I call it a spontaneous family, because I happened to be with four other couch surfers living together, and then we liked each other very much, so we started traveling together. So my Fortaleza family, because we met in Fortaleza, and we traveled together for about 2.5 weeks, and then unfortunately, I had to say goodbye to them and move on, but they're still in Fortaleza, so it was kind of a spontaneous community.
Oh, that's fun. Can you tell us about some of the communities that you've explored so far, especially the ones where there's more of a free love attitude?
Sure. I actually, there are several of them. There are two that I kind of keep going to. Like I went back to a few of them because I just it resonated with my needs a lot. One is in Hawaii, Lulea, in Hawaii, in the Big Island. They mm-hmm. practice a new culture, which is Tech Forum and
oh, yeah. So you were in the community where they have the winter camp?
Yes. Well, actually, no.
I'm going to be going to the winter camp in January. Yeah.
Oh, excellent. I don't know if it's happening in Lulea, but Lulea is... I know Winter Camp last year happened in a different community, but they're all...
Well, it happened in a different place last year because of the volcano, wasn't it?
The volcano happened after that. Happened
okay.
In May, I believe.
Okay, well, I don't know if it's the same, but it's definitely the new culture people. I just don't know if it's the same location, so...
They're very close. They're all next to each other. the one I mm-hmm. lived at is called Lulea, and they also host events, like they're having the Tantra Festival in early February, February 2nd.
Right.
To right, 9th.
Right.
And they practice open communication and they're sex positive, basically.
Right, right.
The other one is because they said they're
having the Tantra Festival right afterwards, so I know that's the same one I'm going to in January. Yay! So you liked that one a lot, huh?
Yeah, it's an excellent community, in my opinion, because they also, they live kind of true to their to the principles of being eco-friendly, so they generate their own electricity, they have their own water. They're basically living off the grid and planting their own food, so you get fresh, tropical fruit from the tree every morning. Mm. It's just amazing.
Mm. Oh, wow.
It's really a wonderful one. And the other one is the Valle de Sensaciones in Spain, near Granada. It's about an hour and a half from Granada, in the Sierra Nevadas of Spain, not of California, the Sierra Nevadas of Spain, the original Sierra Nevada. And Valle de Sensaciones is not just an eco community, it's also an Eros lab. So they also have their clothing optional. They also plant their own they also plant fruit and vegetables, and also use solar power. But they're an Eros lab because they also experiment and what it is like to live basically in harmony with nature, all of it, to be completely honest and open about love and eros. So there's no shame or guilt about any sexual experience as long as it's consensual.
Mm.
So that's also a very positive experience, many positive experiences. And they also host workshops and events and things like that.
And what is that one called again?
Valle de Sensaciones, or Valley of Sensations in Spanish.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Yeah, their website is sensaciones.de.
Got it.
Because
cool.
The founder is German, so it's DE is for Deutsch, for Germany.
Got it.
And there is, of course, Camera, which is the... kind of the flagship, if you may, of New Culture. They are the ones who they have existed, for they're the biggest. They have, I think, at least 120 permanent residents now, and they teach. They do lots of outreach and teaching all over the world. And I highly recommend their book Terra Nova, because that really is a game changer, and it gave me hope that it is possible to. to change the world culture from fear and scarcity to love and abundance, because when you think about it, fear is the most addictive and the most contagious emotion. And so I was doubting, it's like, does love even have a chance? And by reading Terra Nova and visiting Samara and experiencing their philosophies, I really have a lot of faith and a lot of hope that love and abundance actually has a fighting chance.
Wonderful. Yeah. Well, thank you for that. Boy, I could talk to you about communities forever, but let's go back to a little bit more focus about open relationships. And I'm wondering, you know, everybody, the first question people ask is, what, you know, don't you get jealous? How do you handle jealousy? I call it the J word, because that's always the first question that comes up. So how do these communities, what's the most powerful technology that you've learned for people to manage feelings of jealousy?
Yes, that's actually a very common question, like you mentioned. And I just, before I go into how the communities handle it, I just want to clarify the difference between jealousy and envy. Jealousy is when you see somebody having something and you do not want them to have it, and envy is when you see somebody having something and you also want to have it. So in my opinion, envy is not bad. Envy is actually good. Like you see somebody having chocolate cake and say, oh, I want to have a chocolate cake also. So we can both have chocolate cake. But jealousy stems in scarcity. So jealousy is like, I see somebody having chocolate cake and say, oh, they should not be having it because whatever reason. I mean, and that's what I want to come to next is like, jealousy is like an umbrella term. It covers a lot of negative emotions and traumas, and in order to be able to deal with jealousy, we need to be willing to go deeper and ask ourselves, okay, what does this jealousy cover? Is it a cover for a feeling of separation? Is it fear of not being enough? Is it fear of abandonment? Like there's so many different things that we just cover up by calling jealous. But the growth and the transformation happens when we are willing to face what is going on underneath that term. What is happening in our in our bodies, in our emotional and thoughts. What is happening when we say we're jealous? And so in these communities, many of them, actually all the three that I mentioned, let me start with Tamara, because Tamara is kind of, as I said, the flagship of New Culture. They have something called Love School. So before people, if you want to live there, you have to go through a week-long training in their Love School. And I have not been to the Love School, so I cannot give you details about the training. But I know from people who have done it that they basically redefine what it means to relate to others. And they teach self-responsibility. So again, they address jealousy and how to deal with jealousy and things like that. So that's one example, what Tamara does. In Vibes with Sessiones, when you first arrive, you have to agree to four principles or like four things. One of them is that you take responsibility for your own experience. So whatever happens, whatever experience you have or you don't have, you don't say, you cannot blame others for it. It's your own experience and you take responsibility for it. So if you feel jealous, then I feel jealous because I felt my need for XYZ is not being met. So again, they encourage self-responsibility. And in the Leah, they have a regular forum. They hold ZEG forum regularly, at least, I think, once a week or so. For those who don't know what forum is, it's basically a way for the community, for each member of the community, to get seen and heard by all the other members without any judgment. And so this is a very effective way of dealing with the emotions underlying the jealousy. Because when we are able to express our emotions honestly and authentically without fear of retaliation or judgment, then it takes the edge off and 90% of the emotional charge disappears when the emotions are heard. So that's a very effective way that communities deal with jealousy. And of course, there are lots of... it's kind of like... when you have a field of love and abundance, and then somebody's feeling jealous or scarce, like fear and scarcity comes up, if it's surrounded, if this tiny little spot of fear and fear and scarcity kind of arises, if it's surrounded and by love and abundance, then it's easily absorbed and it doesn't grow and start spreading. That's why it's extremely important to, you know, another practice that I teach to practice free love is to surround yourself with like-minded people. Because
Yes. If
you want to live in a field of love and abundance and be able to keep your reservoir filled, if you may, it's extremely hard to maintain that in the mainstream culture, because the mainstream culture is basically a huge field of fear and scarcity. You know, if you just turn on the radio or TV or listen to the news, it's all about fear.
I'm glad you talked about that, because I had it on my notes here to mention the concept of tribe. I was just listening to Esther Perel, a lecture that she gave earlier this year, and she was talking about how we once lived in tribes and we had such a great sense of belonging and such deep connections with people, and we never had to feel lonely, but we had very little freedom, very little autonomy. And now we've flipped it to the exact opposite, where we have so much freedom and autonomy, but we often don't have a sense of belonging. We often don't have enough connections, and we feel very lonely and isolated. So a lot of us are going back looking for tribe. And last weekend I did a journey, and I connected deep within myself, and I felt this universal core wound of separation from tribe. And it feels like, you know, those of us who are practicing these alternative relationship models really need tribe to be able to do it successfully, because the larger culture does not have our back. So I love that you're looking for the right tribe where you can really land. And so can you talk a little bit about how, you know, being in tribe and having community allows you to kind of relax into a new relationship style that wouldn't be available to you if you were just in a larger culture?
Indeed, that's actually very important, and it's not a new concept, because, you know, if you think about it, any kind of community, like people who, for example, let's say, people go to church for tribe and for community. People go to, you know, around their hobbies, they find community. So it's a very natural inclination to want to find like-minded people so they can practice your belief systems freely and in a supportive community. And luckily enough, in this day and age, there's communication is very easy. So you can easily find your tribe online or offline, and or a combination of both. So the resources are there. It's just a matter of believing that, you know, you can find people and start declaring, okay, this is what I'm looking for. And then once you, usually it's kind of like a thread. Like once you grab the thread, then you can start pulling and finding more and more people, like-minded people. So there's no lack of communities online and offline. Or you can even start your own. I mean, many people, there are so many different polyamory-related platforms online, on Facebook, on Meetup, on other online platforms. And once you connect with one, it's very easy to connect with other. Like, for example, when I left on this journey, I only knew about Tamara, because Tamara is, as I said, they do a lot of outreach. So I only knew about Tamara as a community that practices free love. So I went there, and from the people I met there, I found all the other communities. And there's actually, I discovered that even there is a website called Eco Villages that has a basically a list of all the eco villages all over Europe. And so there's so many resources out there that make it easier and easier to find like-minded people. And that is a crucial step in living in a polyamorous lifestyle, is to find your community and to find your tribe. And as I said, even if you cannot find them in your local physical space, then online there's lots of resources, and you're bound to find somebody who lives close to you or within like an hour commute. So it's really crucial to find like-minded people and build your own community.
Right. So those of us that still are living in the city and we don't have the means to go live in a fabulous land-based community, we are often working during the week and we don't have a whole lot of time to go and hang out with community. So if we get triggered, if our jealousy gets triggered in a relationship, what kind of tools can you share for those of us that are just in our day-to-day life and we often have our core wounds triggered, our deepest sense of that I'm not enough or I'm unlovable, I'm not wanted. Some of those deepest core wounds get triggered from what we call jealousy. So what can you give us to take away today for when you're in that place of just so much deep pain and it's hard for you to even do the physical, emotional thoughts process? You know, you don't even have the resources to do it. You're just in your pain. What kind of resources can you give us for that?
Yeah, that's actually the most basic question, and thank you for mentioning that. That's actually a very important step. And that's part of knowing yourself and owning your power. So knowing yourself is knowing how to find your center. So each person is different, but I always, you know, tell people like in your life as you're going about your life, understand yourself and know what makes you shine, what makes you kind of come back to center. So for some people, it might be physical activity. Like for me, dance is my prayer. I mean, when I move and I dance to music, it's like nothing else exists in the world except the music and my body, and it's so healing on many levels. People, it might be journaling, writing. It might be meditation. It might be a walk in nature. It can even be just hitting pillows. You know, emotional release is extremely important, just to kind of get some physical movement with your body, and even scream at a pillow, hit the pillow, crying. Whatever you need to do to come back to your center, and you can even write down a list of things that make you happy, and then when you're in that pain space, just go to that list and pick something up and do it. And a good practice to do before you get in the pain is to like do something loving towards yourself at least once a day. Like, you know, make time for yourself. Like the first basic step is like to make a practice of loving yourself, you know, at least once a day. So go spoil yourself with like a massage or like make a date with yourself and do something that just for you. And so once you have these practices of honoring yourself and loving yourself, then you can when you're in that in pain space, then you can easily find your way out by doing these things that kind of dissipate that pain, like kind of suck it out like a sponge. So when you're triggered, you know, if you cannot remember that list, like find it on your phone or something, like just kind of go to that list of this is how I come back to center. It can even be, you know, listening to your favorite song, singing your favorite song. Sometimes if we change our physical, this is actually my lesson from dance. I teach that in my dance classes. If you change your physicality, like for example, if I'm in pain, I'm usually slouching and my body is kind of closed. Let's practice opening up my sternum and pulling my head up and like walking with a straight spine and smiling. Even that tiny little physical adjustment of my body changes my mood instantly. It's kind of like magic. It's a conditioned reflex. So sometimes just changing your physicality can help you relieve or kind of shift that that spiral, like the negative spiral down. So studying yourself and studying what makes you happy is an extremely important step towards living your power. And also having a bank deposit of moments that you can go back to and think of. And because, let me just step back, I call these like the, actually one of my mentors calls them Aristotelian essentials. So whenever you have a wonderful experience, like you're in this moment, like in a moment and just magic happens and you're feeling so high, store that in like your bank of memories, okay, like a special bank. And when you're upset or sad or depressed or in pain, just kind of close your eyes and go visit that space in your mind. Because as far as the minds go, they don't know the difference between something we're experiencing firsthand or something we're thinking about. So you can actually play with that kind of part of the nature of our minds to change your mood by going to that space where you felt so good and so, you know, so one like in your element kind of thing. So there are so many ways to come back to center.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Hala, for all those very, very practical tips and tools that people can really take away with them today. I feel like we could go on for another hour with all of your knowledge and experience, but we're out of time. So I want to give you a couple minutes to tell our listeners how they can reach you. And I believe you have something that you wanted to offer our listeners as well. So go ahead.
Yes, I'm happy to talk more, to discuss more about practicing unconditional love and free love. I'm available on Facebook under my name, Hala Fauzi, or Hala Dance. It's easier to remember, H-A-L-A, Dance. So you can find me on Messenger. You can find me also on Facebook. And I'm happy to offer basically a free kind of chat or consultation, if you may, for people who are interested in practicing polyamory. I'm not a relationship coach and I'm not a psychologist, so I cannot offer you counseling, but I'm happy to talk about how to practice free love and self-love just from my own experience and years and years of learning the hard way. So whoever the first five people to call or to contact me via Facebook or via Messenger, or if not, I'm also happy to share my phone number, which is 408-246-1129. They can contact me there by sending a message. And we can schedule some time because, as you know, traveling, so we have to find a time that works for both of us. And we can talk about love and polyamory and open relationships.
Awesome. Well, that's very generous of you. We are out of time, but I want to thank you so much for being on the show, Hala, and I wish you all the best in your travels.
Thank you very much, Sumati. It's my pleasure, and thank you for everything you're doing for making the world a better place.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye. On Leading Edge Love Radio, we'll be talking about a group of women that I am a part of called LoveWise Salon. It's a forum for relationship and sexuality empowerment. And there's six women that are founding this in the Bay Area, and we're going to be on the show talking about it next week. So please join us, 6 p.m. Pacific time on Leading Edge Love Radio. Good night, everyone.